From APM, this is the American Radio Works podcast. I'm Stephen Smith. Rural schools in the United States face similar and yet sometimes very different issues than urban and suburban schools. During the past several decades, many rural schools have disappeared as enrollments have dropped and districts have merged. Still, some estimates suggest that more than 20% of all public school students in the United States are enrolled in rural school districts. We will be exploring rural schools over the next several episodes and issues that they face in different parts of the country. States from Iowa to South Carolina to Maine have all considered plans to merge rural school districts. And nowhere is this more topical than in Vermont. Last year, the Vermont legislature passed a law allowing schools and districts to merge either voluntarily or under a plan from the state. According to the Vermont Agency of Education, the plan will mean greater efficiency and therefore better education for students. But not everyone agrees. Many educators and parents say the law, which is called Act 46, will close small rural schools and hurt the towns that they serve. Erica Heilman produced an episode on this for her podcast, Rumble Strip Vermont. The title of the podcast is Our School.
This far north, if you ask anybody in this town, they'll tell you straight out, Montpelier doesn't hear us. They just don't care about us up here either way. But in our own small communities, we are somebody. But when your voice is gone, what is left? There's nothing.
That was Lincoln Patel, longtime school board chairman from Holland, Vermont, a small town way up on the Canadian border. This is a show about something that happened here in Vermont last winter. It was a terrible winter, and toward the end, we were all pretty fed up and tired and broke, and everyone was worried about taxes because they're too high. And right in the middle of all that came a piece of school legislation called Act 46. It was a school consolidation bill that promised to lower our taxes, or that's what they were saying in the news in the beginning. And then some time passed, and all of a sudden they were saying that the school consolidation bill was really about equal opportunity for all Vermont kids. It wasn't really clear how it would do either of these things, but since everyone was fed up being cold and paying taxes, the bill passed. And here we are. But that's not what today's show is about. Today's show is about how this legislation will change important parts of our culture in small Vermont towns, which, when you think about it, seems like a pretty big thing, but I haven't been hearing about it much in the news. This is a show about self-governance, a concept we've held dear in this state for hundreds of years. This legislation wipes out that venerable, totally unenviable institution called the local school board. These are the citizens from our town who are accountable to our children's education and the way our tax dollars are spent. But under Act 46, and for the first time in Vermont history, we won't have any direct authority over our own schools. And if other school consolidation efforts around the country tell us anything, it is that once small town voices are silenced, small schools close. So, this is also a show about what schools mean in the lives of small towns. You'll hear again from Holland School Board Chairman Lincoln Patel, from author and Middlesex Town Meeting moderator Susan Clark, and from John Castle, the superintendent of the North Country Supervisory Union, which is one of the most rural areas of our state. Here's Susan Clark.
When you talk to Vermonters about why they run for office, they usually don't say things like, you know, I'm on the Planning Commission because I was angry about a particular issue in town, or because I own a gravel pit, or those kinds of things. Usually when people run for public office, they say, it was my turn. Somebody has to do this, and I've reached the age where I need to do this, or I have a kid in the school, and you know, I should really help out. That's the kind of public engagement that grows our civic infrastructure. There's a piece of vocabulary here that's useful, and it's the most boring word in the world. It's the word district. The district level, for the last many decades in Vermont, generally speaking, a district is usually along the same lines as a town. That is that's why this is such a major, major moment in Vermont history, is that those district lines would dramatically change under this redesign, and districts, instead of being along town lines, will be in clumps of 900 students. And if you think about it, that's, you know, for a lot of towns, that's like five or six or more towns become the district. And that district will have one school board. So instead of, in Middlesex, I have five people on my little school board. What are the chances I'm going to know one of those five people? Pretty high. What are the chances I'm going to run into my school board member at the store or someplace and maybe have a conversation with them? Pretty high. How hard is it for me to get to a school board meeting? Well, it's right in my town. You know, it's right over there at the school. So my democratic touch, my ability to understand what the school board is doing, my ability to influence their decision, my level of comfort at going to one of their meetings and saying something is relatively high. But under the preferred model in Act 46, you know, that model pink slips, you know, 2/3 of the school volunteers in Vermont. It basically says we don't need your volunteer time anymore.
This is Superintendent John Castle.
Without direct participation and involvement by people on a local board, and it really isn't local control. I understand that there is a fallacy to local control. There are federal laws and there are state laws and there are SUs, but without a meaningful voice with some level of authority, where people say, well, they can have school councils. Well, school councils just don't cut it. I mean, they have no authority. And so people will say, well, why ante up for that? Why am I going to spend the hours and hours that school board members spend? Is because they believe that their contribution has value. And it does. And I've seen school board members avail themselves hours and hours beyond the role of, you know, attending meetings to support a facilities project, let's say, because they have a background in understanding building or facilities. And so they will meet with the principal, call vendors, all of those things. Otherwise, we will have to shift that to a bureaucratic role, which many small schools don't have the capacity for. So you'll create some role at central office for something like that. Whereas that social capital on a school board, it's free. And people give that willingly because they believe in their community. When you take away their voice and their ability to make decisions and self-determination about their own community school, I think it really will marginalize those people. And in many ways, when you look at the loss of jobs, loss of opportunities, people feel marginalized already. What do they have? A town like Holland has no store, has no post office. The school is what brings people together.
I see Act 46 as dragging Vermont, kicking and screaming, into the 1950s. You know, thanks very much, but this great new process that you've created is suburbanization at its worst. It is all of the sense of place, sense of personal agency, sense of this is my government, this is us, all of that gets lifted and basically just kind of like, you know what, we don't need that. That's like 1700s stuff, you know. Let's move into the 1950s where we can have the experts rule. But we're a well-networked, well-informed bunch of citizens who really need a much better, more rigorous public engagement process than Act 46 is promising.
I guess I just feel like if we're willing to erode and potentially give that up in schools, then when are we going to have that conversation about local town governance? You know, are we willing to give it up and say, well, it's not really efficient to have a local select board and a local, you know, road commissioner and all that? Some, you know, at what point do we just say, well, we can have more efficiency? You know, we need to be teaching people to stand up against central office, even if I'm that person. We need to teach people to stand up against the state. We need to teach people to stand up against the federal government when it's appropriate to do that and have a voice.
I'm not bad-mouthing the ideas of consolidation, I just don't think it is a good fit for our small communities that are dotted so many miles apart here where we live in the Northeast Kingdom. You know, just as much as I'm in touch with my roots in Holland, folks out in Island Pond, they feel the same way about Island Pond. It's just a sense of pride, and it's a sense of who we are and what our lives stand for. Our little school graduated 12 students last year. One moved out of the area, and a fellow board member was at the junior high when they were giving out awards. 8 of our 11 kiddos were recognized. So this whole equality and, you know, kids can get more from a bigger school is hogwash. It sounds good in the papers, but this school, as small as it is, turns out children that are doing very well on their next steps in education. We need help educating our children financially. There's no getting around that. But what we don't need is somebody that is 100 miles away telling us how to do it appropriately.
You know, people really wish that they could just make it, streamline it, make it more efficient, less, do I really have to hang out with this person who I don't like that much? And do I really have to listen to that story again that I already heard at the last meeting? And yet, that is what creates the social capital that helps us to move forward when really, really hard times come. You know, when Hurricane Irene came to Vermont, we had a gigantic state, an army full of people who knew how to govern themselves. That, oh, you know, we're flooding. Okay, we need to organize ourselves. Let's see, these people, you know, you guys are the rescue people. You guys deliver the food. It wasn't this sort of run around and everybody for themselves. It was quickly, how do we help our neighbors? So social capital is hugely valuable in crises, whether they are meteorological or political. Social capital is what you draw from. It's a fund that you draw from when times are tough. And you need to pay into that fund. And you pay into that fund through those grumpy conversations that you have at town meeting. Or when you have sat on a school board, even if you only sat on a school board for a couple years, you've had that experience, and then you go to elect officials. You go to vote on issues. You have a vastly stronger sense of the complexity that those people are dealing with. You're not likely to elect obstructionists. You're likely to elect people who will get the job done. And when we see, you know, across America, people electing obstructionists, whether they're from the left or the right, we in Vermont, we know how to govern. And if you've been part of government in some element of your life, you are going to then go on to help create a more functioning government. It's part of how democracy functions.
The legislature does not want to come out and say we are going to close schools because they know how unpopular that would be. But they want to create the climate and the right mechanism and momentum that these larger educational districts, you know, through consolidated governance, would have the political will to close schools. I think they fully understand that. And the statements in the preamble of Act 46, you know, talk about that, you know, this should not be seen in any way as a, you know, encouragement of consolidating actual school districts, I think is just a flat out lie.
And so what happens is that, I mean, again, we've seen it many times across the United States. What happens is that the small schools close. If a town that is already struggling economically then loses its heart, who's gonna move to that town? Who is ever gonna move to a town where you know you have to ship your kid, you know, your first grader an hour to you know, on a bus? Who would want to live there? People move to towns where you know that there's a heart and a soul and a place. I mean, you look at some of these schools in Vermont where not only do the kids go to the school and not only do the parents go to the school, but when there's a basketball game, the whole town goes to the school. When there's a chorus concert, it's what's happening. And it's not just about wanting to see your fourth grader. It is the heart of the community. And that comes at an economic cost But removing it comes at a social cost, a huge social cost, and ultimately an economic cost. Those points of view didn't have a place at the table.
What's the purpose of schools? I think policymakers are quick to disconnect school with community and see school from a rational technical standpoint, where schools have a function to educate the populace around, you know, literacy and math, but not to be engaged in the community. And I think it's really short-sighted. You know, if there's a family displaced by fire or something, what happens? The school immediately jumps into action. There's a spaghetti dinner. It brings everybody together. You raise money. But it's not only the raising of money that is a value. It is the sense of validation and support that you are there. We are there for you, and we are connected with you. And I think the school plays a pivotal role in that. I don't think we should say, well, that's not the job of schools. I think schools, that is part of our job.
If we were having a discussion that said, let's look at Vermont's schools based on education quality, and let's either improve or close the schools that have poor education quality, that would be an appropriate conversation to have. That's critical. Education quality standards, they've only just been implemented. And so the decisions that we're making right now are not based on education quality, because we don't have that information. And instead, it's the Act 46 is based purely on size, really. I mean, I see an anti-rural bias in this legislation that's not based on specific data that looks at the kids' interests. I understand that many people are thinking of the children. I appreciate that. But there is a voice that was missing from the table, and that is the voice of rural communities.
So now, instead of the small schools grant, paying for small schools in sometimes poor rural communities, we are now going to be paying incentives, tax incentives, to some of the most affluent communities we have in the state to centralize. Because somehow that will create economy of efficiency and economy of scale. Well, they're just going to transfer that money into spending, and those students will have more opportunities while other people have less opportunities. I am truly convinced the law will, at the very least, support the haves to have what they have, and the have-nots will have less. And I think there is a huge political shift. And it was, you know, to take the crutches away from, you know, we're supporting schools to stay small. It's like, yes, you are. And that may be okay. But that was perceived as a negative thing. We shouldn't provide an inducement to keep a small school, because that's not efficient and that's not functioning well. And you're not offering a foreign language, so you don't have equity of opportunity. And it's like, okay, we can trade all of that. And is the equity of opportunity being on the bus for an hour and 20 minutes? Is that the kind of opportunity we want to promote for students? Or now the fact that many rural poor parents who have a hard time connecting with school right now and being there for their children are now going to be feeling ostracized and intimidated by a much larger school that's not even in their town? Are they going to walk in those doors to be connected with that community? There is a lot of research that actually supports small schools and smaller environments mitigating the impact of poverty. And those are the things that are not part of the conversation. It's always about what we will gain. It is always about the efficiencies. It's always about the benefits. And I just feel like I get so mad at the fact that there's not a willingness to say, well, there will be winners and there'll be losers.
So. Yep. So equality in education has nothing to do with how many students are roaming your walls. It has everything to do with the heart that the teachers and the administration and the townsfolk put into it. My grandmother, she taught in this school forever. She passed a lot of years ago, but she's still very respected in this town for what she had to do and for what she did and the folks that she helped. And you ask somebody down in Essex if they've got roots that go that deep.
people mostly like it here. A lot of people move here because they like it here. They like small towns. They like what it feels like to live in a place that feels like it is someplace. They figure Vermont towns have always been that way and always will be. But in the last few years, there's been a lot of talk about the inadequacies of our town meeting system and now the inefficiencies of our school system. So, if we give away our local school boards, then we give away our schools. If we give away our town meetings, if we give away all the boring, ornery, and sometimes remarkable conversations between farmers and lawyers, doctors and writers and plumbers, flatlanders and natives, if we give away all this for some promise of efficiency and savings, aren't we giving away part of the reason we live here at all? Because when all that's gone, we're just people living in houses, here and there, along the road. In this show, you heard from Lincoln Patel, the chair of the Holland, Vermont School Board, and from John Castle, superintendent of the North Country Supervisory Union, and from Susan Clark, town meeting moderator in Middlesex, Vermont, and co-author of a book called Slow Democracy, Rediscovering Community, Bringing Decision-Making Back Home. This is Rumble Strip, Vermont. I'm Erica Heilman. Thanks for listening.
Erica Heilman produces the podcast Rumble Strip, Vermont. You can find a link to more of Heilman's work at our website, AmericanRadioWorks.org. While you're there, you can listen to our archive of more than 100 documentary projects. We'd love to hear what you think about American Radio Works. You can leave us a review on iTunes or let us know at AmericanRadioWorks.org, where you can click on the About page and then scroll down to Share Your Impact Story. We're on Facebook at American.RadioWorks, and you can tweet us on Twitter at AM Radio Works. Support for American Radio Works comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Spencer Foundation, and Lumina Foundation. I'm Stephen Smith. Thanks for listening. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.